Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. 8:06 on this Wednesday. It's May 5th, 39 degrees here in Old Town Park City. Sunshine, and on the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, meteorologist Adam Carroll. Good morning, Adam.
Good morning, and yes, there is plenty of sunshine to go around out there today as temperatures are soaring into the low 60s here for those daytime highs in Park City. And we're going to continue to enjoy the warmth here heading into tomorrow, where we'll see a 10-degree increase in temperature to 72 for that daytime high. So it's really, really nice out there for the next couple of days. Now, we will see in the latter half of Thursday a little bit of increase in wind to go with increasing cloud cover. And that's all ahead of a cold front that will arrive during the day Friday, but it's going to start dragging in some clouds ahead of it. Now, we'll see some milder overnight lows with lows in the mid-40s here for Friday morning. But temperatures pretty similar, though we will be a couple of degrees cooler, only in the upper 60s for the afternoon high temperature in Park City under partly cloudy skies. And by the late evening hours, we do have the risk of seeing some thundershowers roll through with the passage of the front. And that will bring in some quick-hitting storms and a little bit of rainfall. But it's Saturday that we'll see a nearly 20-degree drop in temperature under partly cloudy skies and only a high of around 50 degrees and near that again on Sunday. But then we will see more instability returning on Sunday afternoon and evening with another storm system that will slide through the region that will bring in another round of some showers and snow showers for late Sunday into Monday, with highs only in the upper 40s for Park City at that point. And then eventually we'll start gradually warming it again into midweek. So a couple of different disturbances here that will mess up a good car wash. But between now and Friday, boy, I'll tell you, it is going to be some of the nicest weather we've seen all spring.
Okay. Hey, thanks, Adam.
You bet.
KPCW News Time now, 8:08. Well, stay tuned. Coming up on the local news hour this morning, I'll be checking in with the general manager and assistant GM of Mountain Regional Water District, Scott Morrison, and Lisa Hoffman. They'll have an update on the drought conditions and the company's goal to reduce water consumption by 20% this summer. Park City Municipal Executive Assistant Leah Langan and the creator of the Park City Pride Facebook group, Mitchell Walski, discussing progress on the city's LGBTQ efforts. And then the director of operations for Pause for Life, Laura Madsen, talking about the changes they've seen in the last year with the adoption of animals. Stay tuned.
This is Bronson Calder with the Colony at White Pine Canyon, longtime supporter of KPCW and all they do to keep our community informed. We are now at the very end of our final chapter of On Mountain Home Sites, available with ski-in, ski-out access to Park City Mountain. All information about the Colony can be found at thecolonywpc.com.
And coming up on the Mountain Life right after the local news hour, today's guests include Jen Bellow with the Park City Education Foundation. Running with Ed is back in person this year. It's the event is the largest fundraiser for the organization. Then Connor Brown, founder of Park City's newest brewery, Offset Beer, joins to talk about his unique business model. It's beer and so much more. Then a conversation with parenting expert and mother of five, Inat Nathan. She'll talk about her new book, My Everything, the compassionate number one bestseller in Israel, shows that parents, particularly mothers, how to teach children to be strong and independent by seeing the world through their children's eyes and feeling it through their children's hearts. Again, all of that coming up on today's edition of The Mountain Life at 9:06. Summit County Health Director Rich Bolo announced to the Summit County Board of Health his retirement. He will be officially stepping down in August. KPCW's Sean Higgins has more.
Bulla has led the Summit County Health Department as director since 2010 and told the board on Monday night that although he already had plans to retire twice prior to the COVID-19 pandemic, he could not in good conscience step away before guiding the county through the crisis.
Certainly this has been the greatest team that I've ever been a part of. But to be a part of this team, I've delayed a retirement. So I told myself I was not going to leave in the middle of this thing. I was going to wait until we got to a place that I thought we'd made the progress we needed to make. And that time is now.
Bullo was thrust into the spotlight for the county over the last year and would give regular updates not just to state and county officials, but would also be a regular guest on KPCW to give updates on the current situation and answer the community's most pressing pandemic questions. Board member Doug Evans summed up many people's thoughts on Bullo's contributions.
You are a friend to this entire county and a true humanitarian. Thank you.
Before becoming health director in Summit County, Bullo worked in multiple public health roles, including at the Utah Department of Health, directing their Centers for Disease Control-funded programs. He was also a research fellow for the National Institutes of Health and was an adjunct professor and instructor at the University of Utah. Despite the long resume, Bullo said his time with Summit County was his career highlight.
This has been a remarkable honor for me. I've been in public health almost 30 years. I by far the biggest honor that I've had has been in this job and serving this community and importantly being a part of this team. And obviously the board and the council, the community and others are a big part of the team as well. So with that, there you have it.
Bullo indicated he would remain as director until August 20th and help in the transition to a new, yet-to-be-named successor. The Summit County Health Department said in a prepared statement that the Board of Health will be considering a succession plan in the coming weeks. Sean Higgins, KPCW News.
This time 8:13. Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. Well, it's Drinking Water Week, and it also, last month, Governor Spencer Cox announcing that the state is in a drought. In the studio with details on both, I have the General Manager of Mountain Regional Water District, Scott Morrison. He's joined by Assistant GM Lisa Hoffman. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning, Leslie. How are you?
Great. Thank you. So, Scott, do you want to take it? I mean, how does somebody celebrate Drinking Water Week?
Yeah, so good question. Let's kind of start with the meaning of Drinking Water Week. So, it's an opportunity for water professionals and the communities they serve to recognize the vital role that water plays in our daily lives. And I think we've all had a chance to reflect, certainly during the pandemic, and you know, I'm certainly happy and I believe we're fortunate here to have safe and reliable drinking water in our community. And I just want to thank the water professionals who work every day to help make that a reality.
Yeah. And yet we still see so many people drinking bottled water.
That's correct. Obviously, that's a personal choice. There's slogans out there, you know, that say things like tap water, please. I'm certainly a tap water drinker. Again, we have some incredible professionals in this community that are ensuring that our drinking water meets or exceeds all drinking water standards. And I'm fully supportive of drinking tap water.
Yeah, and in fact, we have heard that, I mean, it's actually safer to drink tap water as opposed to bottled water. I mean, bottled water doesn't have to be tested
To be honest, I'm not real sure on that, but I think for my understanding is that even a lot of the bottled water that's out there is just tap water from another community that's bottled and sold. So, again, I trust what we're doing here in Park City, and I certainly support drinking our local water.
Yeah. Do you guys ever do any kind of taste surveys, though?
So at all of the, we don't, internally or within the community, it might be kind of a fun idea, but At all the conferences you go to, in the drinking water industry, there's always taste tests. So that's kind of a fun thing that we do in the industry.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm a snob on tap water. I mean, there's tap water that I love, and there's tap water that just is like
doesn't taste good.
Doesn't taste good.
Yep,
yeah.
Yep. I grew up in the Great Lakes region, and during the summer, it tasted different. You could taste, almost tasted like algae, kind of had a tough taste and smell. But yeah, I think in general around here, it's pretty good.
Yeah. Wow. Let's talk, what's the latest with regard to the drought conditions?
Yes, a good question. As you mentioned, Leslie, Governor Cox issued a state of emergency on March 17th, earlier this spring. And, a lot of the data is a little difficult to wade through, but I'll try to paint a picture for us this morning. So, starting off, if we think about the U.S. drought monitor, parts of Summit County are in what we would call an extreme drought. That's one level down from the most severe level, which would be exceptional. Our snowpack levels in the upper Weber watershed, which is the area that I'm most interested in or concerned about due to our sources of drinking water, it's at 51% of average. So certainly we all know we had a tough winter this winter. And then the last point I'll share is that the surface water supply index, which is effectively a measure of how much water do we have stored and how much water do we expect to come down through our rivers this summer, it's listed at 10%. So a way we can think of this is on a scale of 1 to 10 with or 0 to 10, with 0 being the driest year on record and 10 being the wettest year on record, we're effectively at a 1. You know, it's certainly a very challenging situation that we're dealing with this year, which is why, as you're aware, Leslie, Weber Basin came out with a request for all of their customers to reduce their outdoor usage by 20% this summer.
And that's basically all of us. I mean, here within the Park City Municipal and Snyderville Basin area.
Yeah, that's correct. Weber Basin's a big water supplier through water contracts to our area. So they're, you know, they're asking their customers, which is us. So Mountain Regional Water is asking all of our customers to please do what they can to reduce their outdoor usage by 20%.
Yeah. So how do your water sources look so far?
The sources look great. You know, so Mountain Regional is, you know, in round numbers, we're about 50% supplied by surface water and about 50% supplied by groundwater. Our groundwater sources are looking good. We made some operational improvements last year that improved some of the water quality metrics that we keep an eye on. With regards to the surface water, you know, I think supply for this year is in good shape, but the reason that Weber Basin is asking for these reductions is we've got to try to keep some water in the bank because we don't know what this winter is going to bring. And if we have another, you know, difficult or low snowpack winter, it's only going to exacerbate the situation. So, you know, again, surface water for this year is looking good, but we've got to try to conserve what we can for the years to come.
Yeah. And so, again, what's the goal is to reduce water use by 20%. And I think really what we're talking about is outdoor water use.
That's correct, Leslie. So for this year, the focus is on outdoor usage. If we do get these compounding drought years and our surface water storage and our reservoirs continues to decline, we may see requests for indoor usage reductions as well.
Yeah. So how does somebody do that? Reduce it by 20%? I mean, is it easy?
You know, I think in general it is easy. I'll turn the conversation over to Lisa. She's got a number of thoughts and tips for our customers to try to hit that.
Yeah, there are, you know, several things you can do outdoor and inside. First, what we want to make sure you are is signed up for our water management software tool. Mountain Regional has a platform called Eye on Water. Park City has a similar platform, and so does Summit Water. And basically, all the meters installed in your home now can measure down to 15-minute increments. So this allows for leak alerts. If you have a leak going on in your home, you can be notified. It also allows you to compare your usage hourly, daily, weekly, even year over year to see and really kind of monitor your usage and see where maybe you're maybe overwatering your landscaping, but really gives you some information that's useful. One of the things that we probably may overwater is our grass. So maybe consider reducing grass in your yard. If you're doing some landscaping changes, potentially drought-tolerant plants. Also, mulch is a great thing to put down on those plant areas to help prevent evaporation. We also have a great service that's provided by Weber Basin in the Snyderville area. It's called a water audit, a water check. It's a free service that they will come out to your home. They will take a look at your automatic irrigation system and do an analysis for a personalized and customized watering schedule for your area. It takes about an hour to an hour and a half. You can find more information at slowtheflow.org, and you can sign up on our website to get signed up to have that water check done at your home.
Okay, so that's free, you said?
It's free. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, it's a great tool.
Yeah. And again, I mean, 20% isn't I mean, it's maybe just one less day a week of watering, huh?
Yeah, I think one of the things we've talked about internally is if our customers just adhere to our watering recommendations, which is every other day. If you're an odd address, water on odd days. If you're an even address, even on even days. And watering between 6 p.m. and 10 a.m. will alleviate some of the evaporation during the hottest portion of the day. I think, if you just focus on, to start with, adhering to the watering schedule, I think that's a great first step.
Yeah, and we've been in this situation before, certainly, and we have seen before that by reducing our water use means we're going to see higher rates because you're not selling what you need to just keep the system operating.
Yeah, that's a good point, Leslie. What we have done internally is we have set up a drought reserve fund. Whereby under these circumstances where we're asking for a 20% reduction, we can cover that internally. As we need to ask for further reductions, if the situation worsens, we will have to implement drought surcharges just to be able to keep the wheels on the bus, so to say.
Yeah. And at the same time, we're seeing even more development and growth requests. Mm-hmm. At some point, do you just say we can't accept any new development? I mean, we've often talked about looking at growth through a carrying capacity, water, roads being some of those. I mean, at some point, when do we say enough is enough? We just can't service.
Yeah, also a good question. I wouldn't say never say never. I think that, as you know, Leslie, there's an agreement amongst the major water providers here in Park City and Weber Basin, whereby Weber Basin's identified as the backstop for future water supplies as they're needed here in the community. I think, thankfully, the growth that we're seeing is in higher density type neighborhoods, smaller homes, more clustered developments. These, it may be counterintuitive. These developments actually use far less water than, some of our existing neighborhoods because the yard spaces are so small. I think through conservation, through changes in uses of these new developments, the amount of water per home is going to be reduced. Having Weber Basin there to support the community for future water needs provides water security for many, many years to come. But I wouldn't say, again, never say never, right? It's tough to say what the future is going to bring.
Okay. Anything else, Scott or Lisa, that you want to mention?
Just wanted to mention, if you have any other, you want to research a little bit more on conservation tips, just click the link on our website on our front page. If you want to sign up for the water audit, you can do that there as well. We're also currently conducting a customer survey for all of our Mountain Regional Water customers. We want to get your feedback on ways we can improve. That customer survey link is also on the front of our webpage.
Okay. Scott?
That's it for me today. Thanks so much for having us.
All right. Scott Morrison and Lisa Hoffman with Mountain Regional. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
KPCW News Time now, 8:25. It's the local news hour here on KPCW.
Law professor Danielle Citrone says that soon we won't be able to tell the difference between a video that's real or fake.
We call that the liar's dividend. That's a real boon to the mischief makers.
I'm Manoush Zamarodi. Technology, deception, and our changing sense of reality. That's next time on the TED Radio Hour from NPR.
Saturdays at 10 after Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me on KPCW.
Well, with spring in the air, Wasatch Back residents are itching to get outside. As KPCW's Jessica Lowell reports, bike sales are an indicator that people are ready to enjoy the great outdoors.
It's been more than a year since the pandemic started, and almost all restrictions in Utah have been lifted, including limitations on gyms and events. But people are still looking to spend more time outdoors, which is driving bike sales off the charts. Michael Strawn is the hard goods equipment buyer at Kohl's Sports. He says this year they've already seen more demand for bikes than at the same time last year. He says that's likely because there's still uncertainty looming during the beginning of the pandemic.
everybody was sitting around wondering what was going to happen to the world. And it wasn't really until June until things took off. But we've been seeing the demand since December. We were getting phone calls about bicycles. And in the last 6 weeks, we sold more bicycles than we did 3 years ago altogether. So it's definitely an earlier start.
And Storm Cycles General Manager Eric LaPearl says they've never seen demand higher.
I think people caught on to this idea of being outdoors and riding. And the more people that have done that, it's sort of really taken off in a way that we haven't seen in years. A whole new group of people riding now. But frankly, when you run into them out there on the trails or riding the bike path, they say, man, I can't believe I ever went to the gym.
He says demand is partially driven by the pandemic, but there's an added factor of the amount of people who moved to Park City in the last year. And while people turned to online shopping during the pandemic, Strawn says bikes are the kind of thing most people want to buy in person.
It's kind of like ski boots. You can't really buy them online and know how they're going to fit. And there's certain little tweaks and adjustments that need to be made once the bicycle is purchased that you can't figure out really online. So there's a lot of try it before you buy it. Demo and rental business is very, very strong as well and was huge last year.
And with two seasons of unprecedented demand for bike sales, he says suppliers can't keep up.
There's such a shortage that even the brands themselves can't fulfill the pre-books that were placed last year to bring in bikes for this season. And people looking to get into cycling right now are having a really hard time finding anything in the used market and or the price point market because of the demand.
Even though there are issues with the supply chain, both Cool Sports and Storm Cycles still have inventory available. But LaPearl says customers might need to have more wiggle room when shopping for the perfect fit.
One piece of advice to folks looking for bikes right now is be a little bit flexible on things like color and specific parts kits that are on the bike, because it gives the shop a little bit more leeway to go to their vendors and say, hey, I've got this person that needs this bike. And we're open to, you know, these things. And that will help them get a bike sooner.
And for residents who don't want to commit to buying a bike or can't find one in stores, the Summit County Bike Share Program is back on for the season. Bikes went out on the racks last weekend. County Transportation Planner Chris Putt says it already seems like people are eager to take them out for a spin.
All 20 stations and all 190 bikes are back on the streets and available to be ridden. So far, we've already seen a pretty awesome number of use, too. We've seen about 280 rides just in the first couple days and about 1,000 miles on the bikes this season already.
The bikes are generally available until there's snow on the ground. Riders can either pay per ride or get a monthly or annual pass. Jessica Lowell, KPCW News.
KPCW News time now, 8:30. Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. Well, an LGBTQIA plus public task force was formed in Park City in February in order to further the city's social equity goals. Yesterday, a coffee with the council was held to provide community outreach about efforts that have been made. On the phone with me, I have Leah Langan. She serves as an administrative assistant for Park City Municipal, also the co-chair of the task force. We're hoping that she'll be joined by another task force member, Mitchell Walski. Well, let's start with you. Good morning, Leah.
Good morning. Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah. So maybe just start by telling us, why was the task force started?
Sure. So initially, the task force was formed just as an internal group just to look at the municipality facilities and all of our processes and policies internally. And then we realized that we should really expand our focus to the community as a whole.
Can you tell me a little bit about that? You had mentioned that internal review of social equity policies and facilities. I mean, what did the city find? How, if all, at all, did anything change with the municipality?
Sure. So on a very base level, it started with us looking at just our administrative policies as well as HR procedures and making sure that we're using gender inclusive language in all of our internal procedures. And so we're currently reviewing all of those documents throughout the city, as well as enlisting opinions from, you know, members of our staff that are a part of the community. Also looking at facilities such as, you know, can we have gender inclusive bathrooms at the library and the MARC and various city facilities. So those are the areas which we're starting. And so I hope we're hoping to expand it going forward.
All right. And then went on again to form this external community task force. And that was just what, late last year? I mean, how have the first few months of the task force been?
Yeah, so we have had great interest from the community. We so far have had three meetings. They occur the last Monday of every month, so we've had three of them so far, and we're having new members join all the time, which is really exciting. And you know, right now we're at the very beginning stages of figuring out who we are and what the focus is, but I think it leaves us with a lot of growth to move forward.
All right, so at this point you really haven't decided what the purpose of the task force is?
So we're currently looking at having a third party facilitator really help us to, we have a ton of ideas, but we're looking for some help to really hone in on what our mission should be. You know, should it be a interregional collaboration effort, or should we just start with Park City proper? So right now, you know, we don't want to be too constrictive in terms of where we're starting out, but right now all the ideas are on the table.
All right. And you mentioned that you meet the last Monday of each month. Can you tell us how somebody, if they were interested, could participate?
Absolutely. Yes, we would have anybody who's interested. Please email me at lgbtqia@parkcity.org or leah.langen@parkcity.org. And we'd be absolutely happy to have you. They're occurring right now virtually, although we would like to have a socially distant meeting in the future.
All right. And then what's on the agenda for 2021? Of course, we've got Pride Month happening in June. Anything planned for that?
Yes, absolutely. So we are excited to bring awareness to the community for the month of June. Right now, we have slated updated Pride flags that include the transgender community colors. Those will be flown at 5 flagpoles across the city starting on June 1st, as well as the rainbow Love Where You Live banners. We're also drafting a resolution to present to council at the end of May, declaring June as official Pride Month in Park City. We're looking at planning a Pride picnic and a collaboration with Park City Pride, the Facebook group. We are looking at participating in the July 4th parade. We're waiting to hear if that's a go. And then we're also looking at cross-department collaboration within the city, including partnering with library programs, visibility on buses, some visibility at the MARC. So really just raising awareness across the community.
Okay. We're going to loop in Mitchell Olsky again. He is another member of the task force, also the creator of the Park City Pride Facebook page. You with me now, Mitchell?
Yeah, I'm here.
Good. Thanks for joining us. So yesterday's community panel kicked off with a brief discussion about the LGBTQIA plus initialism. And as was noted, it's just not something that rolls off the tongue. Michelle, you talked about how it has grown over the years as the community has grown. So who is included in this overall community? I mean, do we have to keep adding initials?
No, I think we kind of have a coverall with the plus on the end of the acronym now. But like you said, it doesn't really roll off the tongue, but we are a very diverse and inclusive community as a whole, and there's a lot of intersectionality within the community. So we wanted to acknowledge all of those things, and it has slowly grown over time. So, the acronym is there, but really we are just not really wanting to be put into any specific categories or boxes, be ourselves. And a lot of people in that conversation yesterday said being gay, being lesbian, being trans is not 100% of who we are as individuals. It's one aspect of who we are, but if that's the only thing you're focusing on, you're missing out on a lot of really great attributes of the human behind that title that you're placing on them as well.
Yeah. So can you give us an idea of who is included in this community of initials?
Yeah, so LGBTQIA+, so L would be lesbian, G is gay, B bisexual, T transgender, I is intersex, A is asexual, but A could also stand for ally. There's a lot of other options for each individual letter as well. So, like I said, it's an acronym that we try to kind of cover all of the community, but we know that that's completely impossible. So throwing the plus on the end just says, hey, we're all family. We're here in the queer community, and we're here to support and help you out. If you need anything, find somebody else within the community.
So that basically includes any of us who may not relate to being a lesbian or gay or bisexual or trans. I mean, as an A, I can be an ally of this community? Is that what you're saying?
For sure, yeah. We never want to exclude anyone from any of the conversations. Anybody that wants to be there and learn and contribute to the conversation, whether you identify as queer or not. And like we kind of touched on yesterday as well, every aspect of gender and sexuality is also on a spectrum. It's not black and white, even though we try to put ourselves in a category to have a true identity. It's very fluid, and we definitely want to be as inclusive as possible.
Yeah, and again, I mean, none of us want to be insensitive. Queer back in the day, I mean, as a teenager, as I grew up, that was not a word you used. It was a label, and it was derogatory in some sense. It's okay now to be queer? To say that?
I think context is definitely important with that one. Obviously, if you're saying it in a demeaning or hurtful way, it's still not something that's okay. But it is a word that we've definitely re-owned. We identify as kind of an overall part of the queer community. And as long as you're saying it in a loving manner and there's good intent behind it, queer is definitely coming back.
Okay. Leah, you mentioned how these terms like LGBTQIA+ and marriage equality is still relatively new for a lot of people, and you spoke to how important visibility is for the community. So are there any plans then to branch outside of Park City into the greater Wasatch Back and coordinate perhaps with others in, you know, Camas, Colville, Heber City?
Absolutely. Yeah, we are currently at our last meeting had members of the Wasatch Back LGBTQ plus coalition, and they are doing a lot of work in the Heber Valley. And so we're really looking at other groups that we can partner with. I think we're always more powerful in collaboration. And so we're absolutely reaching out to other groups that may already be doing a lot of the work and to see how we can support and partner with members who are not just in Park City proper.
Mm. And as I mentioned, Mitchell, you were kind of the creator of the Park City Pride Facebook page. It is a private page. As you look to allow people into this group, what is it that you're looking for?
Well, we wanted to respect people's privacy that are joining the conversation on the page and make sure that their identities are protected as well, because you can be a part of the community but not be quite ready to open up or come out of the closet. And like there's transgender individuals that are worried about their employment with the military and things of that nature. So we do have just a brief questionnaire to make sure that you're coming in with a loving intent, with the care in mind to respect people's privacy. So it's not Fort Knox. It's everybody's definitely welcome. And we do have some rules on that page. But we decided to keep it private just to keep individuals' privacy in mind.
Sure. And so has it, for the most part, been a kind, loving community safe space?
For sure. It's a lot of sharing of news articles, what's happening within the community, any events that we're trying to put on anytime we're trying to gather. COVID's kind of put a little bit of a wrench in that, but we've had an opportunity to do a picnic last year. And like Leah said, we're trying to get that going again for Pride Month this year. But for the most part, it's a lot of really great resources for individuals that are part of the community, and conversations with school employees that want to be a little bit more supportive and open, but they're not sure what kind of backlash they're going to get from administration or other parents. It's a lot of bouncing of ideas and how we can go about being supportive of our community and respecting everyone's perspectives and point of views.
All right. Wanted to talk a little bit about Encircle. This is an LGBTQIA plus youth and family resource. They're building a new center in Heber. I think they hope to. I don't know if they've gotten the final approvals. Any plans for the Park City Task Force to help play a role there?
Yeah, I think that we have a member, the chief operating officer of Encircle, is actually on our task force and has been really gracious to offer event space for us. And so we definitely look at collaborating with them in the future. I think they're a great and much needed resource.
All right. And then another panelist called Encircle Heber the greatest shining light in the future for the area. Mitchell, can you talk to the importance of a place like Encircle for young people here in the Wasatch Back?
Yeah, Encircle is a fantastic resource. So they did get a 100-year land grant to build in Heber. So we're just hoping that they can get through the red tape to get that community built. But really, it's to provide a safe space after school for the LGBTQIA plus youth. But it's open to any youth. They provide some great mental health resources. Lots of conversations. They provide resources for parents that are kind of coming to terms with the fact that their child might be LGBTQIA, and really just providing a safe space to congregate, have conversations with people that identify similarly to yourself.
Yeah. And are you comfortable kind of telling your story? Because I think you grew up in the LDS faith.
Correct. Yeah, I grew up in a small Nevada town, and I loved growing up LDS. I think there was a great sense of community. It was all of my friends were in church, so that's where we all kind of got together and hung out, and never really had any feelings about sexuality at all as I was younger. But when I was in high school, I even though I didn't really have any gay role models in my life, realized that there was something different about myself. And I did come out of the closet between my junior and senior year of high school. And thankfully, my family was supportive enough at the time. I know it was still a shock factor for them, and things that we worked through for years to come to terms with. And now very loving and supportive. I don't have as much of a relationship with the church now, but like I said on the call yesterday, I don't put a church member in a specific category. We have some amazing LDS allies, and I have LDS family members that are very supportive of everybody in my family, including myself. So it's kind of challenging to see when there's policies in place like at BYU where they say, hey, yep, you can be openly gay and at the school, and then they come back and kind of reverse that policy within a year. There's still challenges, and there's still kind of that tension between the church and the LGBTQ community, but I know that there's a lot of fantastic allies within the church as well, so I don't hold that church policy on them by any means.
Yeah, and it was a lovely story to hear from Cammy Richardson, somebody who's been in Park City for a while, talking about the story of playing golf with an LDS official, and really opening their eyes to, you know, it's really just about people after all.
For sure. Once you make that personal connection with someone and they can get past the label that they had initially put on you, anything's possible. And Cammy is a great advocate for the trans community. She's part of TEA, the Transgender Education Associates, and she's a fantastic resource, and she's taken it as kind of her life mission is just being visible. So I know she works as a greeter on the mountain every year, and part of her goal is just to find somebody who hasn't met a transgender individual and change their kind of misconceptions or thought processes around the person behind the title.
Okay. Well, again, people can find out more. They can, of course, if they're interested, have a look at Mitchell's Park City Pride Facebook page. Leah, also, does the city have a website that people can get more information?
Yes, absolutely. It's parkcity.org/about-us/social-equity. And the page will come right up.
All right. Well, Leah and Mitchell, I appreciate you spending some time with us this morning. Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
KPCW News Time now, 8:47. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. We'll be talking with Laura Mattson of Pause for Life right after this. Well, a year ago, during the height of the lockdown due to the COVID-19 pandemic, we saw some of the highest numbers ever for pet adoptions. Now that people are returning to work, what does that mean for their pets? On the phone, I've got Laura Mattson, Director of Operations for Pause for Life. Good morning to you, Laura. Thanks for being with us. Again, we were talking about you guys are based in Heber City and established in 2012. So do you work through animal control or do you guys have your own adoption facility?
Oh, that is a great question. We work closely with animal control, but we are our separate own nonprofit. So we do work strongly with Heber Shelter as well as other animal control public shelters across the state. But Pause for Life is its own nonprofit.
Okay. And as you mentioned, so you work with other communities, I mean, even different states. I mean, where else are you working through?
Of course. Yeah, so as we, obviously, we started to make Wasatch County No Kill, which we completed that goal in 2013. So from there, we expanded across the state where we are taking animals now from, you know, Davis County and Salt Lake County and down into St. George, and now even into the surrounding states. So we are frequently taking animals from overcrowded shelters in New Mexico. We are doing disaster response for wildfires in California or for tornadoes and floods down in the south. So our reach is really expanding more into a regional scope.
All right. And then any idea how many animals have been saved since you guys started up?
Yes. So since our inception in 2012, we have adopted out just over 12,000 animals. That has been through traditional adoption, you know, animals coming in, cats and dogs looking for a home to live, as well as through our TNR program. So we work also with the feral cat colonies, bringing those animals in, ensuring they are spayed and neutered, getting any medical attention they may need, and then either returning them to their colony, or depending on the situation, we can help with relocation as well.
And in terms of last year, what did you guys see? I mean, we've heard so many heartwarming stories about how people's pets got them through the isolation of the pandemic.
Of course. Yeah, the one, I guess, silver lining of 2020, if you can call it that, is we had an amazing response to people willing to foster. And as a foster-run organization, that is always our biggest barrier to getting animals out of the shelter and into our rescue, like Pause for Life. Since we don't have an actual brick-and-mortar facility, our ability to save animals is really dependent upon people willing to bring the animals into their homes. So last year, we had an amazing response. Our numbers were similar to the nationwide numbers, where we saw about a 40% increase of people willing to volunteer their time and their home and their space to bring those animals in. We did see a larger number than usual of fosters who ended up adopting their animals, which of course we always allow our fosters to adopt if they choose. And we saw a large percentage last year who chose that route.
All right. And then in terms of that fact that people are returning to work, is there an issue of people having to return their animals?
That's a great question. I know that was a major concern last year that, you know, people who hadn't chosen adoption previously, now that we're in an unusual routine and kind of out of the workforce, are now choosing to adopt, and what that would look like when things got back to a quote-unquote normal. And just for us, only speaking from Pause for Life, we haven't really seen that increase of returns yet. For our organization, we average about a 4% increase or 4% return rate per year. And again, that could be an animal that was adopted last week from us or an animal that was adopted 5 years ago from us. Regardless of when the animal was adopted, we always take them back. So they always have that safe net there in place to bring the animal back to Pause for Life. So just speaking from our experience, we haven't seen that increase in returns yet. We're certainly keeping an eye on it in case that does happen, but we haven't been seeing it yet.
Great. And then in terms of the demand that you're seeing now, I mean, has it dropped off quite a bit for adopting?
Of course, yeah, it's interesting. We're seeing our foster numbers are going back to where they were pre-2020, so we're not having all those emails and all those calls of people saying, how can we help your organization bring in more animals? So in that regard, our foster numbers have decreased back to our pre-2020 numbers. It's funny, our cat adoptions have gone back to where they were before the pandemic. We're still seeing a large demand for small dogs, though, and I'm not sure exactly why small dogs are such a popular demand right now, but any dog under 30 pounds, we are seeing them typically adopted within 2 days. It's been a pretty typical length of stay for us. So yeah, it's funny. Our one large demand so far has still been those tiny dogs.
All right. And yeah, they're cheaper and easier, I'm guessing, but it's springtime, which means that it's kitten season. What have you got available there?
Yes, we had a huge increase from the shelters. It's always this time every year we get all those calls saying we have so many, you know, very pregnant cats or baby kittens that have been dropped off to the shelters. Can your organization help us? So over the past 3 weeks, we have taken in roughly 100 kittens, that being momming kittens, bottle-fed kittens, weaned kittens, in all different stages of development. So our foster homes are getting pretty full right now, and now the kittens are starting to get ready for adoption. So this week we are getting our first few litters of kittens spayed and neutered, ready to go home. So if anyone out there is looking to adopt a little kitten this weekend, Saturday would be a great day to do that. You can come by our adoption center. We're open from 10 to 5 on Saturday. We're down in Heber. We'll have all of our kittens, our first batches of kittens, ready for adoption, as well as some adult cats as well. And of course, if the Saturday doesn't work, come by any other time. Monday through Saturday, we are open to the public. Stop on by, and we'd love to assist you in your quest for adoption.
All right. So what's the address that people need to see you at?
Yes, our adoption center is located on 89 North 100 East in Heber. We are open Monday through Saturday.
Okay. Hey, Lisa, anything else you wanted to, or Laura, excuse me, anything else you wanted to add?
Oh, no, that's all for us.
Okay. Thanks so much for your time. The Wasatch County Council is meeting today at 3:00. They'll talk about the RAP tax as well as an ordinance establishing a MIDA liaison department. KPCW's Carolyn Murray has more about that.
The Wasatch County Council will consider a second reading of the Ordinance 2105, which establishes the Military Installation Defense Authority Department. The MIDA development encompasses at least 4 luxury hotels, thousands of homes and condos, a mountain resort base area, and commercial projects. The building authority is independent of the county jurisdiction and can make planning decisions through its administration. The county council may take action and decide on a recreation, arts, and parks tax resolution. UDOT representatives will be at the meeting to update the council on the Heber Valley Environmental Impact Study, which will begin this summer. UDOT is looking for community input on the study. It is the beginning phase to build a bypass around the Heber Main Street commercial area. The council may approve rules for an ordinance outlining tax sales and administrative costs to delinquent properties. You can join the meeting via a Zoom link on kpcw.org. Carolyn Murray, KPCW News.
You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. News time now, 8:59.
Hey, I'm Bill DeVille. The Time Machine goes way back to 1959 this time. Two of the best jazz albums ever released. It was the year the Day the Music Died occurred when the world lost Buddy Holly, the Big Bopper, and Ritchie Valens. Ben-Hur was the biggest film of the year. Rod Serling's The Twilight Zone premiered on the small screen. It's all 1959, our year, on this episode of Time Machine From the Current.
Tune in to Time Machine From the Current Saturdays at 11 a.m. right here on KPCW.
Habitat for Humanity of Summit Wasatch County looking for volunteers 18 and older to help build two single-family homes in the new Silver Creek Village neighborhood. Individuals and small groups can work alongside a local family to help build the home. No experience is necessary. You can sign up for a half or full day, weekdays, and some weekend dates and times are available. For more information, go online to habitat-utah.org or give them a call at 435-658-1400. Just another week and then Runamuck Park Dog Park will be reopened. They are closed through May 14th for restoration. Please plan accordingly. Giving this popular area a break during mud season helps promote trail stewardship and revegetation growth, also allowing the staff to complete maintenance and restoration work. Again, they'll be back open May 15th. Stay tuned now. We've got headline news from NPR coming up, followed by The Mountain Life. You've been listening to the local news hour here on KPCW. I'm Leslie Thatcher. Good morning.